started. Hi, I'm Julie Ramos and I'm acting chair tonight. And we're going to go around the room and if you can introduce yourself, state your name, your neighborhood, any affiliation. Start with me.
Hi, Andrea Chiller and I'm in Mount Scott in Southeast Portland.
Hi, I'm Marisa Rivera and I'm in Southeast Portland.
I'm Roberto Rivera and I'm in Northeast Portland.
Jeff Bell, representing the Professional Standards Division of the Portland Police Bureau.
I'm Lieutenant Stephanie Lorenko. I was with Central Precinct at the time of this incident and I love the country.
Sorry, I live from Southeast Portland and I'm with the League of Women Voters. I'm with all four of Southeast Portland.
Mike Bigham, Southeast Portland. I used to be chair of the CRC.
Carol Fishman, North Portland, member of League of Women Voters, Portland.
Constantine Sabir, IPR.
Lauren King with the City Attorney's Office.
David Keith Davis, Multnomah County Cop Watch and Fight the Sweeps, Portland.
Regina Hannon, Portland Cop Watch.
Dan Handelman, Portland Cop Watch and Flying Focus Video Project.
Neil Simon of Southwest Portland.
Michael Luna, Northwest Portland.
Vanessa Yeri, Northeast Portland.
Kiasha Ford, Southwest Portland.
Okay, thank you. So the ground rules are posted and I am going to hold to them pretty rigidly. If you have any questions, there's also individual copies on the table. What we're here to do today, we'll spend the whole meeting on an appeal. We do this in a two-step process. If possible, we will complete both steps tonight. The first is a case file review. First, we determine whether the investigation, in this case by Internal Affairs, is complete and thorough enough. That is, whether enough evidence and the right evidence has been gathered to allow us to make an informed assessment of the allegations and findings. Each member of the CRC has had an opportunity to review the complete investigative file developed by IA, along with the Bureau's findings and the communications with the appellant. If we agree that the investigation is complete, we will move on to hear the appeal. If we think more investigation is necessary, we can send it back for further investigation, and we will meet another day to actually hear the appeal. This first stage is not about the merits of the allegations. The second step is the appeal. We will review the substantive of the investigative file and the findings made by the Bureau. We will then have to make a determination as to each allegation of whether a reasonable person could have made the same conclusion as the commanding officer who made the finding. If we conclude that a finding was unreasonable, we can vote to challenge it, and we will recommend a different finding to be substituted. The challenge then goes to the Bureau for a decision on whether or not to agree with our recommendation. In terms of public comment, we will have public comment three times. Before the vote on the case file review, before the vote on the appeal, if there is one, and after the appeal concludes, before we adjourn. The procedures build in time for everyone in the room to speak and participate if they want to. We need to respect each other's time and hopefully that will get us done with some clarity. The case file review, comments on procedure. I will outline the allegations and establish some ground rules. IPR and IA will explain what investigation was done and what materials were made available for CRC for review. The committee will ask questions and raise issues as needed. We will take public comment. Again, I'll repeat this again. When the time comes, especially if we want to hear the appeal tonight, it is best in the interest of all involved to keep these comments relevant relevant to the sufficiency of the investigation. There will be a time to discuss the substance of the events that are alleged to have occurred and the reasonableness of the finding. At the case file review, that is not the time. So the allegations. Allegation one, Officer A used inappropriate force when taking appellant into custody. It's under the category of force, directive 1010.00, use of force. Allegation two, Sergeant B used inappropriate force when taking appellant into custody. Also force, same directive. Allegation three, Officer A applied handcuffs inappropriately when taking appellant into custody. Procedure, directive 870.20, custody and transportation of subjects. Allegation four, Sergeant B applied handcuffs improperly when taking appellant into custody. Procedure, directive 870.20, custody and transportation of subjects. Okay, now I'm going to go down the line and I want you to say yes or no whether you've completely read the file and reviewed all the information.
Yes, I have completely read the file and reviewed all the information, including watched the video.
Okay.
Yes, I have as well.
Yes, I have as well.
Yes, I have.
Yes, I have.
Yes.
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 Okay. As a reminder, the committee is not to deliberate the substance of the allegations, but to ask questions about the investigation and material in the file to ensure completeness and readiness for an appeal hearing. IPR, it's your opportunity.
So IPR received this complaint from the appellant December 14th, 2015. Given that this was a force allegation and we knew it would go to internal affairs, we did a brief intake with the appellant and forwarded it to internal affairs February 28th, 2015. From there, I did an investigation roughly around 60 days. And the case was conducted, it was under 180 days, and during the appeal period it went over 180 days. And so that was basically IPR's role in this case, which was basically processing the case and then doing a completed internal affairs investigation.
Okay. So anyone from CRC have any questions for IPR? All right, could I, A, please discuss their investigation?
Yeah, sure. Briefly, we received the investigation from IPR, and it was assigned to investigator John Rhodes. In this case, the investigation was relatively simple in terms of John gathered video evidence from media organization that broadcasts the city council meeting. So he gathered the video, which you would have seen in the file. Interviewed staff at city council and identified some witnesses who had actually physically witnessed. He did speak to some folks who hadn't witnessed the event. He spoke with the appellant, and then finally he interviewed the officers. The appellant did provide some names of witnesses who were not interviewed, and he was unable to provide contact information for those witnesses, so that's why they were not interviewed by internal affairs. And then the case was sent out for findings, and that's it.
Okay. Okay, this is the opportunity for CRC to ask questions about the investigation itself, not about the content of the allegations.
I have a question. So with regard to those witnesses that were named by the appellant, did IA do any due diligence on its own behalf of trying to locate these witnesses? You'll be looking them up, seeing if they're in the system?
The issue was the name, and I'm not going to mention the names. The name of one of the witnesses is a very common name, something akin to John Smith, and we were unable to identify that person. The other person, the name was given to us by an alias, and I'm not sure the appellant knew his real name. So yes, there was some attempt done, but we were unable to identify them on our own, and we were unable to contact them.
So I noticed when I was reading through the transcripts and looking at the video, there seemed to be one witness who was a community
It's the broadcaster for the city, I believe.
Was that the only civilian that was interviewed? Other than staff and the police?
I believe he was, yes.
Okay. And I noticed that there was a man in the background of the council chamber and a woman to the side. Were either of those people interviewed?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Yes?
So can we ask the appellant questions or just the two?
Right now you're just asking that.
IPR. I don't have any questions for you.
Any other questions?
We're just asking questions on the investigation process,
yes.
Right now. Yeah.
So I guess my concern is that all of the witnesses were either security, police officers, and there were like citizens in the room, but they weren't interviewed. And it's my understanding, I guess, I don't know when we do it, but I'll do it now. I'm going to ask the appellant, did you bring forth any witnesses?
Yes, this guy, Colonel Moses, who's on Facebook, and his name's, I think, Shane Rosen, maybe, in real life, and Charles Johnson, the guy who threw water on James Young, he's actually my main witness, and I tried to get him here, and I'm sure these guys are familiar with him, and that's the name they were mentioning, that he's just such a common name, but obviously they know who this common name person is because he's excluded from this meeting. And
so do you have a way to get a hold of him?
I've tried to see if I could have him as a witness, and I asked him about it, and supposedly he's not allowed in these meetings.
Right.
Is James Young even a member of this interview?
Yes, he is. But I guess I'll go back to my question. Do you have a way to get a hold of him? So if we were to send it back for more investigation and they could interview him, do you have a way to contact him?
I think, provided you with his phone number, and I can easily, if his numbers change, they can get his new number. He actually filmed a bunch of the stuff where they were using pain compliance techniques, but he's homeless and he lost his phone, so, or it was stolen, I can't remember which one.
Okay. So I guess I'm looking to the other committee members and what you feel if the investigation is complete.
Well, I think if there's an opportunity to contact Mr. Johnson, I think that it should be me. If we do have a number, if Mr. Bissonnette has his number, then I feel like at least, even if he can't appear at CRC physically, at least he'd be interviewed, because I am concerned that there are no civilians without ties to...
So could I just say a concern? Sorry.
Okay.
Concern that I have with the investigation. My concern with the investigation is not that it's not complete, it's just that it's not clear why was the appellant arrested? And it also is not clear what, because the appellant identifies themselves as being media. And so it's not very clear in the investigation as to how should the media be handled by law enforcement in this case. And so to me, I have a concern that he was wrongfully arrested or targeted by the security guard in this case. And so I kind of wanted to have more in the investigation, because the investigation didn't go that direction. It went into the use of force. We don't go into, you know, the issue of the contracted security service, like how do you know, where is the boundaries? You know, in this case, the security guard is the one that makes the first contact, and so where does the boundary, where does that begin in a contract setting? And so the other issue is the identifying as media is like how should City Hall respond to media in this case? That's the concern that I have.
So I guess I'm going to direct us to like where we're at right now in terms of the case file review. So mm-hmm. What are you suggesting in terms of the case file review, that the file is not complete and you want more investigation, and who would that be?
I think the for the allegations listed, the file is complete, in my opinion. So for the four allegations listed, the file is, you know, the investigation part has been completed. I'm okay with what the investigation provides. To me, is this other question as to why was he arrested?
And that's more
of an allegation.
And in the policy portion,
yes,
of this.
And so
proceeding.
I'm sorry.
That stuff would be more in the appeal. We discuss that in the appeal or in policy.
No, it will be right now, because if I want to bring forward and I add an additional allegation, suggest an additional allegation for wrongfully arrested, then it will be right now that we will need to send it back for an additional investigation.
So is it in regards to it's missing an allegation for whether or not the force initiated by security, or whether or not he had
probable cause to arrest? Do you understand what I'm saying? He in the investigation, we learned that the appellant identifies themselves as media, and so given that a crisis incident was happening, he started filming that incident, given that he's media and that his role is to, you know, to keep an eye, to his title is cop watch, so it's basically to film everything that is happening. That was his role. And so it's not clear as to why was he arrested. Why was he initially, arrested? And so they do make the allegation that he was disrupting, but his disruption was filming. And so,
well,
under that circuit,
it talks about that they were clearing the room and excluding people, and he didn't leave.
Right, but he's media. And so, to me, it's like if the media, you know, if there is a reporter or someone filming, you know, that identifies himself or herself as being media, should that person be kicked out, I mean, or removed or asked to leave? And if they don't, are they subject to be arrested?
So just from an IPR perspective of us taking the community members' complaint, so the city, as the employer of the officers, is concerned about the conduct of Portland Police Bureau members. So the policies of the City Hall, of the facilities, of how they decide to exclude people, whether that includes media or not, whether the appellant was wrongfully excluded from City Hall, those are outside the purview of the administrative investigation, because this is a process that's looking at whether the involved officer and the involved sergeant acted appropriately. So there are four allegations that I ended up investigating. So that's within the purview of command, when command made their decision, and then CRC when you're reviewing a completed file. So the CRC has the ability to send a case back for additional investigation. Per code, the CRC does not have the ability to add an allegation. There have been times where the CRC has made recommendations that either IA or IPR add an allegation based on the committee's consideration, but that's something that's left to the discretion of whoever decided, whoever did the investigation.
Okay, thank you.
Well, on that note, can the appellant ask?
Well, you know, so anybody can ask anything. So whether it is done, so, we're going off of what's in the city code. So the appellant's avenue to discuss his dissatisfaction with an investigation is this appeal process.
Right.
So it is basically the investigation that was completed by, in this case, Internal Affairs. It's not to relitigate anything or have any additional investigation. You folks have the ability right now to add, to have additional investigation done. Code gives you that authority for you to ask at one particular moment in time for additional investigation, either by IA or IPR.
Okay.
Anyhow, I'm only bringing that forward because those are the things that kind of caught my attention. So, and you know, to me, that's kind of how my decision process is made.
All right, so.
So also the other one. So there's two people that have not been interviewed. Mm-hmm. There's the Facebook friend. If you have the contact information, the other thing that I just keep thinking about is the fact that some of these people might not be that comfortable conducting these interviews with law enforcement and maybe more comfortable with IA asking these questions over the phone. I mean, that is a concern of mine just in general, but there might be some sort of, you know, relationship and it's uncomfortable and they don't feel comfortable answering these questions from someone calling from Internal Affairs. But either way, there's two people out there that we know have not been questioned at all, and that concerns me.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any thoughts?
As to the two people, do we know at what stage they were present? Because they did clear the chambers, right? So were they witness to the beginning of the incident, outside the transportation to the car? Do we know what they supposedly witnessed and what the topic of their testimony would be?
They basically went back in because they heard Barry Joe screaming. They left the chambers and then they went back in because they heard Barry Joe screaming and saw the cops rush in.
The person I'm speaking to, he was in the background through the whole video.
Okay.
So he was there. But I don't know his name. I don't know who he is. So anyway, I guess I share Ms. Ford's concerns. I just feel like if there's an opportunity to get a different perspective or to see if there was anyone else, because most of the people had been cleared. Mr. Johnson, quite honestly, I didn't see him on the video, but he's claiming he's a witness. Since he can't be in the room, I think it's only fair that he at least be given an opportunity to discuss his perspective. But anybody else?
I agree. I don't know. I wouldn't feel comfortable calling this investigation complete without interviewing all the witnesses, and we don't know what they're going to say. We don't know what they saw until they're interviewed.
I agree as well. And I think, you know, just my reading of some of the witness testimony, I got the impression that they sort of know the appellant, and that may have colored some of their testimony as well. So, you know, maybe new to the CRC and I don't have any of that history. That was sort of my interpretation of that. So it would be helpful for me to hear from somebody else who maybe doesn't have that sort of, you know, coloring of the appellant.
They actually lied on a
Mr. Davis,
on a
we're not.
Recently about
could you stop, please? Thanks. Go ahead.
Did you feel like the video provider, because there were a couple of videos, there was the video that's focused right in the chamber, and then where the most of the arrest is happening, and then there is Mr. Davis, the appellant's video that's also provided. And so it provide, I mean, you have a clear picture of what's going on there. So
video is focused mostly on the other person, though. So what was happening to appellant was, I feel like, not very clearly captured on the video. Was off to the side and obscured by sort of furniture and other items. It wasn't the main focus of the video.
Yes, Mr. Davis.
So did you guys ever see the partial video of me being tackled by a G4S security guard at City Hall?
We had four videos in our purview. But so I'm not sure if it's the one you're referring to.
Provided by the city itself? That shows me being tackled by Mike Cohen, a G4S security guard, because the city actually had video of this, but they conveniently lost it. And I filed a $220,000 tort claim in this, so it's in their best interest to lose footage like that. And then I also won the case, and you can look up the security guard who tackled me, and what you guys really need is the G4S security use of force policy, which they bought tooth and nail.
But we don't have any jurisdiction over the private security force. We're just here to discuss these allegations with the Portland Police Department. And so, let's get back
there. These guys are acting as a proxy to the Portland Police and the City of Portland, and they're
Mr. Davis, we're going to continue. Thank you.
I have a question for all of you. As it relates to the four allegations, are you citing specific areas that you feel that maybe the investigation fell short by not interviewing those two witnesses, or?
Well, for me, it's about the use of force and the handcuffs. And if the witnesses saw that, I would like to hear their perspective.
Okay. Anyone else? I make a motion to send it back. Interview those missing.
Okay. We have to, before we take a vote, we're going to take public comment. But,
is there other areas that maybe you felt that could fall short as well, as it relates to the allegations?
I mean, for me, to have a scenario in such a public place with so many other potential witnesses, it's surprising the lack of balance in the witnesses we heard from. But we've heard from Internal Affairs about the efforts that were made, and I'm wondering if we could put a timeline on it, or what our expectation is of how much greater effort we would expect out of Internal Affairs to find and actually contact those witnesses, or whether IPR would have to make those interviews in a situation that would make it more comfortable for these witnesses to actually have a candid conversation. I don't know. And I'm not sure what our mandate allows in that either. If we send it back, I mean, we're looking at already a year of this case, and I agree that it sounds like this body feels like the spread of witnesses seems relatively narrow, and that's troubling. But what if we come back in 3 months and it's the same case file?
Then at least we did our due diligence.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's normal procedures and normal expectations about, you know, attempting to reach someone, and you have databases and all like that. But I don't have any expectation that it would go on endlessly and they would, you know, dig under every rock and stone.
Does Internal Affairs use social media to contact potential witnesses in any cases?
We use whatever method we can to contact folks. So if a Facebook approach is necessary, then that's what we'll do.
So did we utilize Facebook, or you just didn't know the names at the time?
As the appellant said, one of the names was King something, or I can't remember.
Colonel Moses.
Yeah. So we were unable to find that person.
On Facebook? Because it sounds like a handle.
Well, the information from the file was not that it was on Facebook, so it was just that was his name. So we were unable to identify that person. And again, the other person has an extremely common name, so we were unable to identify him as well. It sounds like there are some other potential issues that may have made contact, even if we had a phone number, difficult. So.
I have another question for them. Do you have the resources to keep on trying and trying to contact those witnesses, or is it?
You know, Mr. Rivera, that's a good question. And so part of the problem with the system we have is that after this case is assigned to the investigator and taken away, and it works its way through the process, and it goes out for findings, and it eventually gets appealed to you folks, he's working on several other cases. He's moved past that. So. Granted, this thing has been going on for a year, but he has not actively been working this. He tried to during his initial investigation. We are forced to, given the time constraints placed upon us by the Department of Justice agreement, we're forced to balance some of the amount of witnesses we interview with the timeline. So yes, we try during the investigation, but once he turns the investigation in, absent a request from either IPR or if it gets appealed from the CRC, he's not actively doing that because, again, as soon as he has that case done, he's given another case.
Yes, Mr. Troy.
Good evening. I'm sorry I was a few minutes late. Jamie Troy, your volunteer at Appeal Process Advisor here. Good evening. Mr. Davis does have the Facebook information for the individual, so I think that individual can be at least contacted by Facebook. I don't know what the response will be, but if you're looking for due diligence, we can certainly assist with that. And then it is accurate to say that I contacted IPR in preparation for the appeal to ask whether or not there could be an accommodation made for Mr. Johnson to appear. Because an appellant has a right to bring a material witness to an appeal, even if they've not been interviewed prior to or as part of the investigation. And I understood that was not possible because of legal prohibitions on him appearing before this committee related to past actions to Mr. Young. So we did attempt to do that, and I agree that you don't have any information from him that you could weigh in on your decision-making process, but we can get, Mr. Davis is indicating that you can get that contact information. And might I suggest the committee that if you're going to vote for further investigation, that you weigh in on whether or not that should be IPR or Internal Affairs. I would note that Mr. Colonel Moses, or Moses Rosen, is homeless and may be difficult to track down and may not be interested in speaking to law enforcement as part of this investigation, and it's great that IPR has staffing and investigators that allow them to do due diligence and to participate in this process, and that might be a good use of resources if you're looking for a more balanced perspective on what was observed on the day in question.
Thank you.
Guest question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Troy. In the efforts to have Mr. Johnson appear and the request that was made, couldn't Mr. Johnson have submitted a letter or other testimony sharing his perspective that he would have shared if he'd been here today?
I've never seen that done in an appeal. It's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. It wasn't part of the investigation, so it's not something that you would have relied upon. And then the question always comes in the process of an appeal. If you receive new information that the decision maker, yeah, the bureau did not rely upon to make their decision, what happened?
Right.
Yeah.
It appears to me there are still many unanswered portions of the ordinance which continue, such as allegation formation of whether or not we are appropriately investigating.
Is there any more thoughts before we have public comment? Okay, how many people have public comment? One, two, three?
Two and a half.
Okay, why don't we go for 2 minutes each?
All right.
Hi, Dan Hamilton again. I'm with Portland Cop Watch. I'm also going to talk a little bit about my perspective of a member of Flying Focus, because it is concerning that a member of the media was arrested while trying to videotape somebody else's arrest. I think that it's a fundamental right, not only in this country, but international law, for media to have access to an incident of interest that involves a government employee. And I think that even if there's an order from City Hall for the officers to do it, they have an obligation under international law to refuse an order that is unconstitutional and against international law. So that should be investigated. I think that nobody talked about whether the subject was interviewed. The subject was in the room at the same time this was happening. I agree that IPR should do further investigation, not internal affairs. If there were any questions passed from CRC to internal affairs about the investigation, those are normally read into the record. It would be helpful for the community to hear if those got answered and what they were. And in the case fire review report, and it looks like this didn't go back to get clarified with Officer A, but Sergeant B says that Officer A said he used a wrist lock, and Officer A says he didn't use any kind of control hold. So it doesn't look like they went back to Officer A and asked to clarify that. That seems like another lapse. And I also want to point out that this investigation was done between January 7 and March 21 of 2016, which was before the water tossing incident. Mr. Johnson appears almost weekly at city council meetings, not hard to find. He was actually in the same chambers with the director on Wednesday afternoon, where I was. Very easy to find in City Hall, and I'm hoping IPR will make an effort to do that. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you. Regina Hannon, Portland Cop Watch. I agree with what Dan was saying with regard to Charles Johnson, and it seems to me in terms of the witnesses, it's very much stacked against Mr. Davis. If nobody in this room or in IA or IPR doesn't know who Charles Johnson is, then I think that's a bit makes the person wonder. And I also am concerned about the fact that if he wished to come, or if Mr. Davis wished him to come to testify, that the exclusion, I think, is absurd under those under that particular reasoning. He has as much right to come. He has as much right to have his witnesses come and speak as anybody else. And again, I think it's fairly stacked against Mr. Davis in terms of the number of witnesses. And for IA to say it was a common name that they couldn't quite find out who it was, I think that's a bit specious as well. Everyone knows who Charles Johnson is. If they don't, then they need to get a little up on what's going on.
Thank you.
I just have a couple clarifying questions because it came in late. So I was wondering what the four original allegations were, because you kept talking about how there were four original allegations. And then I also had a question about if there was only one investigator involved in this, and how many resources you had access to, because it seems as though Mr. Davis could find him on Facebook, and Charles Johnson is so readily accessible, as they say, that they found him earlier, and the DA can find him, and Charles Johnson is so frequently in City Hall.
Okay. Thank you. The
allegations are on the table.
What?
No, she got it.
Yeah, she got it.
Okay. All right. So, does anyone have a motion? Well, I'll make a motion that we send the case back. Mr. Sevier?
Ma'am.
Can we request specifically that you do the investigation, or is that in our purview?
Well, I've been busy looking at city code at that particular question. There's no prohibition on that, and that has been something that's been contemplated in the past. I don't think it's actually ever, actually it's occurred once where I didn't do it, wasn't willing to do an additional investigation, I barely knew it, but that's been a number of years ago. So whatever the committee requests of IPR, we will do, but we have similar resources as internal affairs. You can try to subpoena somebody, and if they don't show up, they would have to answer to a court. I don't think that would be an appropriate use of a resource. But the timeline that internal affairs had when they're doing this investigation, those are the same timelines we would have if we had additional investigations. My investigators are busy investigating a lot of protest-related cases right now. So my expectation for them would be that they would try to do their due diligence to contact both Colonel Moses and Mr. Johnson in their efforts, but that they couldn't keep the case open for a period, for an extended period of time. And on the second point that was brought up in public comment about Mr. Johnson's presence here, so that's an order from Multnomah County.
Yeah.
So if Mr. Johnson violates that order, that, you know, doesn't make a difference to me. It's really an issue between him and his probation and whether he remains out of custody or not.
Okay.
Is that an indefinite? Is that an indefinite period, or is there a?
It's a period of his probation. He's on probation, I believe, for 18 months. So.
Okay.
It is until.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't say when it ends.
Yeah, so I was in the courtroom when he was sentenced. So he was sentenced for a period of probation for 18 months. One of his conditions was that he was supposed to stay away from Mr. Young and as well as CRC meetings. He's able to attend any other city meetings, but that is something between him and the state of Oregon.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
So I make the motion that the case is sent back for further investigation by IPR staff, that due diligence is used to contact Colonel Moses via Facebook or Twitter or any other social media, since that's his handle or name, and that contact is made to Mr. Johnson with the information provided by the complainant.
A second.
Okay, starting with Mr. Sun.
Aye.
Yes.
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 Okay, so what that means is the case will now go back and they will try to interview these witnesses. Notify us when they've exhausted their attempts or they have done so, and then we will hear the appeal at a later date.
So, one thing, so per city code, when CRC makes a request for additional investigation, hypothetically, we're supposed to have a response back within 10 days. So I can just let you know right now, I'm the only person at IPR who's familiar with this file. I will not be investigating this. So I'll be assigning this to an investigator to gain all the knowledge that I provided during their investigation. So it's gonna take a period of time for my investigator to get up to speed and then to conduct their due diligence and finding two witnesses that you want to interview. So it's not gonna be done in 10 days. That's what I'm letting you know right now.
All right. So like I said, the appeal will happen at a later date. Last opportunity for public comment. How many people? One. Take another 2 minutes.
Hi, Dan Handel, one more time from Portland Cop Watch. First of all, I assume that it would be against the judge's order, maybe I'm wrong, if Mr. Johnson appeared by speakerphone to the meeting, so that may be something else to think about. The reason I saw Mr. Johnson and Mr. Sevier the other day was that the auditor was making her proposal that, you know, she circulated to all of you last month, and you all got in your confidential folder, and we didn't have a copy of it. So we didn't actually see the language until maybe a week and a half before the hearing. And then the evening before it went to council, a new version came out, and then the city council members all made proposed amendments. And my suggestion is that they not try to rush this through. I think it's very important for the auditor to have independent counsel and be secure in her independence. But I'm hoping that you consider saying, hey, this needs more thought, because she's still embedding the ombudsman's office in her office in the same way IPR was going to be embedded in the charter. And if you want more independence from the ombudsman, and I said this to council, I once had a formal complaint against an IPR, not this one, an IPR director and an auditor, and I was told by the ombudsman that they couldn't investigate because they were in the same office. So I think that's another example of something that wasn't thought through all that. So I'm hoping that you will reflect on that. I'm also assuming the CRC members are paying attention to what's going on in the streets with the police attacking protesters. I'm really hoping that the crowd control work group will hold public meetings where people can come in and talk to you about what's going on. And we have a new issue in the Cop Watch newsletter if you want to grab that before I leave. And finally, I know it's really hard to coordinate your schedules. And for the time being, the COAB, this is probably their last meeting tonight. You see, Dr. Silver's already gone. But it'd be best if you try not to hold the meetings on the same night at the same time as other advisory boards that have to do with police issues. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comment?
I guess I wasn't going to say this because I've said it at every single meeting, but I guess I'll have to say it again and piggyback on what Dan said about the crowd control work group needs to get up and running. And there have been enough really bad incidents out on the streets in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I think that this group needs to be aware of that and to give feedback as to how things might be changed or be different. And I can only see that it's going to get worse. So once again, that needs to get up and running and put good things.
Okay. Mr. Davis?
So I wanted to give some public comment too, since I'm a member of public too.
Yes, we have 2 minutes.
So this actually goes a lot further because G4S Security recently lied on a stalking order of protection put on me by a city employee who came out and got in my face and said, aren't you a sex offender? This is Nick Fish's senior policy advisor, Jim Blackwood, who got in my face and said, aren't you a sex offender? And he was with another, one of Nick Fish's policy advisors, James Dunphy. And I saw James Dunphy later, and 2 weeks later, and just for the record, I have no charges like that. I've never been accused of anything like that. I've never been accused of a violent crime, any of that stuff. So you have a city employee coming out of Nick Fish's office right when I'm kicked out of city council chambers, immediately meeting me in the hallway with James Dunphy and Mr. Blackwood, who said, aren't you a sex offender? And I definitely let him have it with multiple explicitives and told him where he could stick it. And then I saw him, both of those guys, a couple weeks later, and I said, you know, if you want to slander me, talk a bunch of garbage and all this other stuff, there's a whole different other legal way we could handle it, and it's called a boxing gym. And so, you know, so Mr. Dunphy, he went and got a stalking order of protection put on me and said that I have a long history of that I'm mentally ill and I have a long history of criminal erratic behavior and I'm violent. And then he talked about how he was with Gabby Gifford. And he basically said that he was a staff member of hers when she was shot, and they made a big article in the OPB called Is City Hall a Safe Place to Work? They didn't contact me at all, and I did talk about going to different city attorneys' homes and members of the count of the commissioners and you know, the city council members, and I said that that I'm going to go to your house and have a protest outside.
Your time's up, Mr. Davis.
It seemed like I was threatening them with violence.
The meeting is done.
And then D4S security lied on the report at the hearing.